Welcome everybody to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 183, recording this on Friday the 9th of September 2011. I'm Steve Litchfield in the chair this week, and with me in Sussex I have...
Rafe Blanford.
And Kat?
The cat, yes, it's around as well.
If you hear any meowing or scratching or squealing from Rafe as he gets sat on. Also in Edinburgh I have...
Ewan Spence. I don't have a cat with me, but if you do hear any screaming or shouting and being sat on, then... You know, use your imagination. It's an audio podcast.
And in Hull.
It's David Gilson, and no one's going to sit on me today.
Yeah, yeah.
David, just for your benefit, David, a cat, small thing, four legs, bit like a dog, but smaller.
Really?
Yes, yeah, you can have them at night from the Chinese.
Brilliant, thank you.
Rafe's got one of them.
The things you learn on this podcast. A few items of news before we get down to analysis and chatty stuff. Symbian Anna continues to roll out around the world. We do appreciate that people in our comments are saying, we haven't got it yet. It is an international thing. And it really brings it home, really, how many different variants of every phone Nokia has to produce in terms of software customizations for different operators in different countries. When you actually look at the list of product codes for a particular device, I was trying to update the firmware on my X6 the other day for this pimping article on the site, and the number of product codes ran into the hundreds around the world, all for the one device. You'd have thought, well, maybe four or five different variants. No, there were hundreds of product codes. And Nokia's got to arrange delivery of firmware updates for each of these product codes and test them and check them, and also deliver them over the air and allow for bandwidth constraints and so forth. So it's not a trivial task. Apparently, 9 more countries went live with Symbian Anna during this last week. Apparently, Rafe, the Americans have now got it.
Yes, this latest set of countries is really for sort of Nokia Alps and Southeast Europe. So it's places like... Austria, Bulgaria, Serbia, Albania, Greece, Cyprus, etc., etc. My understanding is that the United States got it, I think, about 10 days to 2 weeks ago, along with some other American countries. So we're getting pretty near complete rollout of Symbian Anna. I think there may be one or two more countries to come. And in a few cases, there are operator variants that haven't been approved, and so they may be a little bit behind. But on the whole, Nokia's actually been very good this time round about getting operator approval at the same time as kind of the SIM-free version. So in terms of, you know, smoothness of firmware rollouts, I think this is actually one of the better jobs they've done. It's perhaps getting more comment people saying, I haven't got it yet, simply because it's a bigger firmware update. But, you know, reflecting back on some past firmware updates, it could take anything up to 2 or 3 months or even longer, or never happen at all in the case of operator variants. So, yes, you know, I think most people should be able to get their hands on Symbian Anna now. I'm sure there's someone who's listening who's immediately going to say, but I haven't got it yet. But it should be in the next week or so. And if you haven't got it, you know, you can contact Nokia Care in your country and they may be able to give you a more precise update. It's not really worth our while going through every single country for obvious reasons.
Yeah. And it should be also note that if you can't see it over the air, then do check by OviSuite itself. And in my case, looking for the X6's firmware, OviSuite didn't deliver, but Nokia Software Updater, which is their standalone utility, which was in Beta Labs and is now fully graduated, Google it, Nokia Software Update Utility, runs under Windows, that pulled out a firmware from the ether that OviSuite didn't seem to know about. So do check your N8 or C7 or C601, whatever it is, it's running Symbian 3, do check it with Nokia Software Updater, a standalone utility, and there's every chance that that may well pluck out Symbian Anna for you. Moving on with the big news of the week, I guess, Microsoft Business Apps for Symbian Bell. Nokia's announced the availability in the next quarter or so of a number of Microsoft-developed business and productivity solutions. What does this mean, Rafe?
Well, this is really just a sign of Nokia and Microsoft working quite closely together to deliver productivity apps for Symbian. I mean, as you recall, this is where the very first Nokia-Microsoft partnership happened a while ago. And actually, the executive in charge of making that happen was Stephen Elop when he was working for Microsoft. So in one sense, this is the latest round of this. So it doesn't really come as a big surprise. I mean, last time round, it was relatively small stuff like business communicator. This particular announcement actually has quite a few things in it. It's probably worth our while just working through some of those. And then sure, we'll talk about some of the maybe the strategic implications of it. They're saying, as you said, a number of updates. They're coming to the Symbian Bell platform. So that's obviously the three new devices, but also the older Symbian 3 devices. But you will only get this on Symbian Bell, so obviously you'll have to wait for the update for things like the N8, C7 and all those devices. Yeah. And the aim really is to provide the best possible mobile enterprise experience. In other words, that means tying in with all the Microsoft software and services. So going through it specifically, some of the applications, you've got Microsoft Link 2010. That's actually a rebranded version and update of Office Communicator. And that's really providing secure corporate instant messaging and presence, although Link actually does integrate and federate with other IM services. I'm not sure whether that will apply on mobile as well, but on mobile you do get an update so you can do things like rich presence and also do calling through the Link backend. That is actually a callback service or least cost routing for enterprises. What that really means is it just integrates with the Link backend, so companies control their calling more easily and you can route it through Link rather than sort of doing it out through the operator and all of that. It usually works by doing a callback service, but I think for most people it's actually going to be the IM and the presence that's the interesting bit.
This replaces the Microsoft Communicator that all of us have seen in our SW update screens over the last year or so, but none of us have actually known what to do with.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Office Communicator, like Link, kind of relies on having the appropriate server in the back end for your company. And for most consumers, obviously, that's not something they have. And so, yeah, in one sense, irrelevant. And actually, this applies to all of these updates. This is very much focused at the sort of the business market, enterprise users rather than consumers. Although there are a couple of things in here that I think very much will appeal to consumers as well. And one of those is Microsoft OneNote. For those that don't know, that's part of the Office 2010 suite. It's kind of a rich note-taking task management information tool. I mean, it effectively freeform notes with text, and then you can insert pictures, audio and ink, which is kind of handwriting put into a kind of a freeform way of arranging notes. And you know, for some people it's very popular, and this is now available on the mobile device. You can read and edit notes. There are some limitations ever to be seeing things on a mobile screen. You don't have quite the same amount of space to do things in. But I had a quick look at this the other day. I was given a demo of it. It certainly seemed quite smooth and thick, and it's kind of, if you like, Active Notes, but as part of the Microsoft suite. And so for those that have used Active Notes on their devices, this is going to be a good replacement for that. I mean, as we know, Active Notes has kind of gone away in the Symbian 3 era, which I always thought was a bit of a shame.
Do we know whether this new software is written in Qt or whether it's native Symbian, Rafe?
This is mainly native Symbian, but it is using the Symbian Bell look and feel, so you know, with the kind of the new look widgets and the back buttons, and it does, you know, look as it should do on Symbian Bell, and that's, you know, one of the good points about it, because it makes it easier to use. The third application worth talking about is PowerPoint Broadcaster. This is more, I think, directly of interest to enterprise. It allows you to broadcast presentations from a PC to a mobile. And actually, this is part of the functionality within PowerPoint 2010 at the moment. But I mean, the way to think about this is you get sent an email for a conference call. Not only does it include the conference call details, it includes a link that you click on. It will then kick off a presentation which is being controlled by the person on the other end of the conference call. You kind of have a visual aid as you're talking through things. It's not, as you might imagine, a local thing. It is very much, you know, a receiver for this broadcast technology. I think the one that sort of caught my eye most of all in one sense was Document Connection, and that basically provides a single point from where you can access Office documents. And it's not just the local file system, it'll also look through your email inbox and get anything that's attached to an email, so kind of a one-stop shop for all of those documents. At the moment, if you tap on one of those files, it'll open in QuickOffice, but I'll give you an update on that in a minute. The other thing it does is you can connect to remote SharePoint servers. Now, SharePoint is a technology that Microsoft is an enterprise tool, basically for online collaboration and document sharing. Effectively, it's kind of a cloud-based storage system with a lot of extra tools going on. So you can think of this as kind of the sort of business equivalent of something like Dropbox or any of those other cloud services. And obviously, having that kind of integration provides, you know, a very good way of being able to get at your documents when you're on the road from a business point of view. The final update that's, I think, worth mentioning is an update to Microsoft Exchange ActiveSync. That's what was formerly known as Mail for Exchange. In other words, the ability to sync email, calendar, tasks, etc. on your phone using a Microsoft Exchange backend. I mean, this technology is also used for syncing with Gmail, Hotmail, and a number of other technology, so it's not just restricted to Microsoft Exchange. And in this update, we're getting improved search capabilities, particularly for email that's already in your inbox, but also external that's sitting on the server. There's a kind of integrated conversation view. That's actually something that's coming in Symbian Bell, that will be in all sort of the mail applications, in theory at least. And it works pretty well. It's, you know, as you might imagine, you click on an email, you can see kind of the thread of the email, what's gone on before. But it's not fully expanded. It's actually done quite nicely. It's, you can see in the screenshots on the site how that works. Similarly, it uses the updated mail widget on the home screen. But I think the one that will get most excitement, and I was kind of surprised Nokia didn't talk about this in the press release, is that it's going to support multiple exchange accounts. I kind of did a double take during the briefing when I heard this and sort of checked, are you sure? Yes, no, we're sure about that. We're supporting multiple exchange accounts, and you know, it, for the very reason that, you know, people use it for business, but they quite often have it on their personal account, and it's being used by more and more providers, Google being the most obvious example. Yep. So yep. I have to admit, I had to restrain a hurrah during that particular briefing, so as to appear completely professional, of course. But I, just from a personal point of view, that's something I will definitely be using, and I'm really looking forward to being able to do that.
Exchange Active Sync, which was previously Microsoft Exchange, a mail for Exchange, this is supposed to synchronize contacts and calendar as well as email, isn't it? Because I did try it recently and I got absolutely zero support for syncing contacts, but that is supposed to work, isn't it?
Yes, I successfully use it all the time for syncing my calendar and contacts. It is slightly fiddly to set up because actually the way Nokia have done it, you set up the email account and then you have to go and activate in the settings the kind of the PIM software and say, yes, actually I also want to sync my contacts and calendar as well. Okay. But it's fairly trivial. Having said that, maybe we should do a how-to to explain how you set that up. Yeah. And we'll certainly do that once this new version comes in with the multiple accounts, because I think a lot more people will start using it then for obvious reasons. All of these updates actually are going to be available through the software update application, and they should arrive sometime in the fourth quarter. As usual, Nokia weren't going to get more specific than that, but we don't really have too long to wait for those. I mean, I'd expect them to arrive sometime in November. We're going to get the first Bell devices, and then those updates will be delivered probably, you know, a month or so later.
The really big news in the announcements yesterday, which I guess we should have mentioned at the start of the show, proving that we absolutely do not know how to trail or tease anything big. We just plow through it in our usual methodical manner. There's a big update to the business software suite. So QuickOffice, which has been used for the last 3 or 4 years and licensed from QuickOffice by Nokia, that is being replaced next year, apparently.
Yes, that's right. I mean, Nokia said this is the first update, this is coming in 2011, and then in the first half of 2012 we'll be delivering the next sort of business productivity software update, and that's going to be native versions of Microsoft Word, Excel and PowerPoint. Those applications are written by Microsoft, and actually it's the first time you'll have Microsoft written Office applications on a mobile platform other than Microsoft's own, which I think really hints at the strength of the partnership between Nokia and Microsoft. And yes, you're quite right, that will replace QuickOffice. And so I mentioned earlier in the document connection application, it would open in QuickOffice if you tapped on one of the files. Obviously that will change over to these Microsoft provided applications. So yeah, that is a big change. I mean, to me it's not such a big deal in one sense, because that functionality is already available. The updates that we've already mentioned, things like OneNote, SharePoint access, and Link, those are all things that, you know, add significant extra enterprise functionality, which makes Symbian or the Symbian Bell platform specifically extremely strong in terms of support for the Microsoft services and software for business users. I mean, the only thing that really gets close to matching this is Windows Phone itself, and actually it's Windows Phone Mango, because things like Link only come in on Windows Phone Mango. And you could actually argue in some places things like PowerPoint Broadcast, but I think more particularly on the platform security in terms of the encryption that's available and kind of some of the security certificates that you can potentially put onto these phones, Symbian is actually even stronger than Windows Phone. So for enterprises that are looking to do, you know, a very complete integration, you know, with everything in their systems, actually the Symbian platform might be their best option, because they also bring in things for voice over IP, for example, if you've got Cisco systems in there. and particularly with regard to security. It'll be interesting to see how that's sold. I suspect actually what Nokia and Microsoft will be going is, look, combine these Nokia Symbian devices with these Windows Phone devices from Nokia and quietly other manufacturers as well, and you have a very broad portfolio of devices. And obviously for a business, they don't really care what platform it's running on. They care about their workforce being able to access their email, access the corporate documents, or get onto the corporate IM. And so, you know, the underlying platform's a bit irrelevant as far as they're concerned, especially when Microsoft and Nokia also said they're working together to enable kind of mobile device management. That's the idea, that you can install applications remotely, remote wipe, or remote configure devices. And for the Symbian Bell devices, support for that is going to come in the Microsoft System Center Configuration Manager, a lovely bit of branding terminology there. But that basically means that companies can manage all their mobile devices remotely in terms of blocking installs, or, as I say, remote wiping is really the big one, the security thing there.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, imagine you've got, you know, thousands of devices that you have to configure to a certain email account or a new IM system. If you can do that all via remote management, you're saving, you know, a load of money. I mean, it's not practical to sit there entering the same configuration setting thousands of times, but if you can manage that all remotely. So that's why remote management is such a big deal. And we don't hear an awful lot about device management, but actually that's often the critical thing when businesses are deciding whether they're going to deploy, you know, several thousand devices. And in big enterprise, obviously, it can get to tens of thousands of devices. And so that's why that kind of update's significant. And really, as I say, this is a very strong story, at least on the Microsoft side of things. And of course, a big competitor here really is RIM's BlackBerry devices. And Microsoft and Nokia both were sort of emphasizing the fact that all of these extra mobile bits come at no additional cost and you don't need any extra infrastructure. And clearly, they're trying to draw the comparison there with BlackBerry, where you do have to install extra software, pay extra license fees and things like that. And actually, I think it is a big point. You know, collectively, these devices create a pretty compelling mobile enterprise offering. We'll have to try them out and see how robust all of this is, but it looks very promising indeed, I think.
Did you see the new Office Suite running at all in any shape or form on devices the other day?
No, I didn't. You know, obviously, I did press to get some extra information, and all I was able to get is that it would arrive in the first half of 2012. And obviously, there's a big question there about how complete it will be. You know, will it be as good as QuickOffice on other platforms? I think QuickOffice on Symbian is okay, but it's been a little bit left behind in recent years.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think the benchmark there will be Office on Windows Phone, and maybe QuickOffice and Documents to go on some of the other platforms. So it'll be very interesting to see that when it arrives.
After all we've seen this year, Ray, we started off with the February announcements. And the various layoffs and lost most of the Symbian development staff at Nokia being headed off to Accenture or put under their umbrella. Then we've had Symbian Anna being released, actually in concrete form. We've got it in our hands. We've got Symbian Bells not only announced but demonstrated right around the world and coming very soon. We've got new devices. And now we've got Microsoft coming on board and saying they're putting the big investments into Symbian. Nokia are making big noises about it. Isn't this all a huge vote of confidence in Symbian again?
Well, yes, I think that's a very fair thing to say. I mean, I don't really think there's any particular change here, but in the sense that it's, you know, showing the way that Symbian can get software updates and how it's very important for Nokia as they kind of transition to Windows Phone. And when we talk about transition, people think about kind of an immediate switch, but of course it just doesn't happen like that. We're talking about a process that happens over many years. So, you know, Nokia have talked about supporting Symbian until 2016, about, you know, 10 new devices to come in the next year. So clearly there's going to be new Symbian devices next year, and, you know, possibly beyond that as well. I think this obviously harks back to February 2011 when people were talking about, is that the end of Symbian? It wasn't the end of Symbian then, but we've talked in the past about the communication issue there. And I mean, I've sort of maintained, even when I heard that, you know, Symbian isn't going away and it's going to continue to be updated, but in the sense that this sends a very clear signal, yes, it shows Nokia is, you know, and continues to be committed to the Symbian platform, but really that's because it's business sense to do so. They've got a lot of existing devices out there, they've got more devices coming, a lot of customers who are familiar with this, and let's not forget, you know, Windows Phone isn't ready to suddenly takeover because, you know, it's going to start on the higher end devices. It's going to take a while to get down to the mid tier, and some markets prefer the Symbian devices. I mean, in a very real sense, I think the Symbian devices have very different characteristics to Windows Phone. I've commented before that there's almost two distinct type of devices here. You know, Symbian, the traditional smartphone, if you like, communication centric, has excellent battery life. It's got a UI that's familiar to a lot of people. And so, you know, that can continue on. Windows Phone, I think, draws more on the way that iPhone and iOS kind of change the market towards these big screen devices. Calling them computer centric, I think, is a disservice. It's really kind of a slightly different way of looking at devices. And so in many ways, I feel they're quite complementary. And so that you can see one going up, one going down, but they will coexist, you know, in this 5-year period. It's almost as if you can have both of them at the same time because they will serve different sets of customer needs. But, you know, putting my Symbian hat back on, putting a bit of cheerleading on, absolutely, you know, it's a really good vote of confidence in Symbian, a really big investment, and actually makes these devices, you know, really quite competitive. You look at the Bell UI, you know, I've had a chance to have a go with that. It works very nicely. I'm really looking forward to getting it on the device. I think that makes it really attractive to consumers. You add in this, it suddenly gives a very strong enterprise play on these Symbian Bell devices. And so, you know, there's a lot to like on these Symbian Bell devices. And I really think they're going to give Android in particular a big run for their money in the mid-tier in particular because of the value, the battery life. All the things that we like about Symbian are still there. And, you know, if anything, become stronger because of these updates, which, you know, make the whole platform and the devices more competitive. So I actually think we'll see something of a resurgence of interest in Symbian because people kind of did write it off in the media, but that was never necessarily reflected in the reality in the market. Yes, there were some drops in devices in terms of sale numbers, but actually some of those have perhaps been exaggerated because of the sell through and overstocking and that kind of thing. So it'll be very interesting to watch the next few quarters to see what happens. I mean, I've got kind of a side bet that Symbian Bell may end up surprising a lot of analysts and doing better than people expect, simply because it actually delivers what a lot of people want.
There's also an interesting argument here when you take a step back and look where these platforms are aimed at and how they're used. Windows Phone, as Elop and everybody else has rightly pointed out, is very much focused on the person, the individual, you know, rather than having an app economy, they're trying to go for a people economy. And so when you click into somebody in the address book, everything's connected. When you have an email coming, you can jump to their Facebook, to their Twitter, to their LinkedIn, to your contacts, to the games you like, and so on. So it's, you know, very much a personal access device. Whereas you look at Symbian Bell now, and all of a sudden, the heavy-duty business applications are coming in. And yes, they're available in Windows Phone as well. But having used them, having used 7.0, looking forward to get my hands in 7.5, it feels that, you know, Windows Phone is going to be very flashy, very an operating system lifted straight out of Japanese anime. Whereas Symbian Bell is going to harken back to older clamshell-like devices from the 90s. It's very much focused on delivering a business environment. Now, I know that people are going to say that, you know, one phone should be able to do everything. Well, yeah, that's true. But at the same time, you know, you need to have a focus on the device. And I'm wondering if Bell is actually becoming a very attractive option for business. And when you look at where Research and Motions is going, there could very, very be a nice gap in the market next year.
Yes, I think that's a good point, Ewan. And I think I'd also point out that this kind of business market expands potentially beyond, you know, the QWERTY handsets. You know, you think of the E6 and business email, and obviously the BlackBerry devices have the QWERTY keyboards or the half-type keyboards in particular. But we can also see, you know, it's not just about mobile email for businesses. You know, if you're getting all of your employees onto this, it may be just about calling or some of the other aspects in terms of document access or, you know, instant messaging. And so some of the other Symbian Bell devices that are, you know, quite cost competitive, things like the Nokia 600, for example, or the C601, could be, you know, just as relevant here. And I think there's a potential to see enterprise in terms of smartphones and mobile phones expanding beyond just business email, which is why these things like SharePoint and OneNote become important, because there's actually a lot of potential for that kind of expansion. And so the enterprise market, I think, will expand, and there's sort of a lot more competition, as well as kind of the idea of apps and services, you know, becoming relevant to the business world, I think the most critical of those are going to be the ones that tie in with existing infrastructure. So it kind of reinforces this message that, you know, things like OneNote, Link might be, you know, the thing that tips the decision, especially when you've got this broad range of devices to choose from.
And talking on the broad range of devices, I think it'd be interesting to see which devices sell best when Bell is deployed across the whole Symbian free range. Because if you look at the devices that were announced with Symbian Bell at the Try Something New event, I mean, particularly the 700, which is only going to be the only one ranged by operators over here, they don't really look like business phones. So there isn't going to be the subconscious cues that maybe a buyer in a business will think, well, yes, that's the model we'll deploy to our employees. Whereas if you get the E7 or the E6 or even the N8 with Bell, it makes a much more compelling product because I think people will take those handsets much more seriously.
Yeah, let's move on though quickly. Now, Dropbox has got a new version of its mobile website, which is interesting because it's all based on HTML5. Now, David, what are the compatibility implications with Symbian phones here?
The compatibility implications are that any devices that aren't running the new ANA build of web basically won't work. It's the data comes through, but if you... I still, just to be in sympathy with everyone else, I still haven't got ANA on my N8, partly because I haven't had time to update it. And I tested the new Dropbox mobile site, which people can find at dropbox.com/m, on my pre-ANA N8. And all of my file list came through, but it was just as an unformatted list. So you either need to update to ANA, or if you're on a pre-Symbian free device, that isn't an option. But fortunately, it works perfectly on Opera Mobile 11, which everyone can run. Dropbox have included some new features with this site. There's a search box, so you can search for that pesky file that you knew you had somewhere but couldn't quite remember. They have a quick file action drop-down list for each phone. At the moment, you can only share or delete files. And there's a nice handy menu for getting to your account settings. So, yeah, pre-ANA phones won't work with this unless you're using Opera Mobile 11. And you can try that at dropbox.com/m.
But can you upload files?
Oh, actually, no, you can't. You still can upload files. So you're going to have an app, which I recommend Qtbox for. So it seems rather crazy that you can't upload to Dropbox through Dropbox's own website on your mobile device.
You've got to wonder that functionality must exist in HTML5. It's just a question of them implementing it.
Well, you don't even need HTML5 for that feature. I mean, you can upload files with like old HTML technology. So I really don't understand why Dropbox haven't included this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll investigate this and keep on top of this story for our loyal readers. Out this week, Nokia has released more plans for its NFC, near field communications, or as it says in its new blog, the near field connectivity blog. It's all run under the auspices of Nokia's developer program. And there's several tidbits here. I mean, Rafe will put the link in the show notes to the blog itself. That Nokia have explained the reason they've gone with a sort of a bit by bit approach. Rather than going straight ahead with full NFC functionality, including, you know, wireless payments and paying using your phone in the supermarket, is that it's actually very, very difficult. There's a huge amount of variability in payment providers and regional boundaries, and it's, I would say, getting that side of NFC working is at least an order of magnitude harder than simply transferring data or URLs by scanning tags or tapping phones together. So they basically put getting NFC out there into phones, getting people used to it, but used to tapping hardware together, and then they'll work on the mobile payment side in next year, which makes sense. They also say in their near-field connectivity blog, this is their quote, we will make all of the software-level improvements available to them via the upcoming Symbian Bell upgrade. And they also confirm that Symbian Bell itself, yet again, more confirmation, will be available as an update to all existing Symbian 3 and ANA handsets. So lots of good forward-looking optimism there on the NFC front. I've got several NFC handsets here. I know Rafe has as well, and Rafe's also got NFC tags, and we're looking to do a big feature on near-field communications in the near future. on the site.
We should just point out here, Steve, that it's only the Nokia C7 of the old devices that actually has a NFC chip inside it. And so although the N8, the E6 sure. and all those yeah. devices will be getting the Bell update, they won't be getting NFC simply because the hardware doesn't yeah. exist. Yeah. But yes, I've been using it with the C7 and the tags, and it's really rather magic technology in a way. You just tap your phone onto something and information appears on screen, either opening up a website or just a text field or adding a contact to your database. And there is something just that's quite cool about it. I guess it's always the case with new technology. But looking at it on the new device as well, you know, you're going to get more of these use cases. And I've said before about the money thing is going to come in time, but there's a lot to enjoy with just the kind of the basic information retrieval and pairing with your Bluetooth accessories. So I, for one, am very much looking forward to seeing NFC arrive. And I hope developers are looking at it to think about, you know, interesting things they can do with the technology as well.
Yeah, I think one of the other companies that are looking forward to NFC making a decent impact is going to be the networks themselves. We're seeing the squeeze now on income from them. SMS streams are dropping down. Everybody's fighting for more data, but still wanting to pay only 15 to 20 quid a month. They're looking for more revenue streams. And if a solid mobile payment system can come off like a credit card system, where all the mobile companies, where, you know, there are so many transactions going over the web browser now. And yes, OviStore, you know, does have carrier billing. But if the carriers can get to the point where your phone is regarded as a touch and go payment system, such as a credit or debit card, you know, then they're able to slice 1 to 2% off each transaction. That is another revenue stream for them, and they're certainly looking for more and innovative ones to be going through. So I think they're going to be watching it very carefully, and there's a lot of movement in this space as well. I mean, O2 have actually set up to be a payment, and not quite a bank, but a payment clearing company with an overall group with themselves, Vodafone and Orange, T-Mobile, Everything Everywhere, whatchamacallit, and Three in the UK. Rogers over in Canada just asked the Canadian government if they can be classified as a bank so they can do mobile payments like this. You know, this is one of, it's like GPS chips, I think, 10 years ago. We just looked at them and went, well, okay, it tells us where we are. What good is that? You know, an NFC chip, it does a connection between two devices. What good is that? I think that, you know, we are going to see a huge amount of NFC explosion, probably in two generations of technology, not the next batch of handsets, sort of 2012 block, but the 2013, 2014 handsets. I think we're going to see a lot of drive to make them actual mobile wallets and universal as we go forward, both in the UK and Europe and abroad.
Yeah.
And I'm just going to chip in with the weekly point of pedantry on this subject.
You're not Linux, are you?
I'll see you after the show. We had a couple of comments on Twitter about this. The Nokia developer website have a blog about this, which is called the Near Field Connectivity blog. And yes, folks, NFC does stand for Near Field Communication, so I think they have misnamed that, unless anyone wants to correct me. So there we go.
I thought they're just being more generic and perhaps widening the term to include other related technologies and things that are of tangential interest. But yes, you could be right. It could just be a typo. So watch this space. I should, when I mentioned earlier that it was I had several NFC devices, of course, I didn't actually mean several Symbian devices, because there is only the one, as Rafe pointed out. I do have the Google Nexus S here, though, and no doubt I've seen launches from several other manufacturers in the Android world all coming on board with NFC, and also in the Windows Phone world. So come the end of the year, I think many of us will have multiple devices to test, and we can really try the interoperability. So do you have anything more on NFC, Rafe?
Well, the only thing I'd say about NFC... that Ewan mentioned, you know, things coming over time. One of the most interesting aspects of this, of course, most of it is software based, and so it's quite possible to see extra functionality being added to existing devices. And we kind of, C7 is the best example of that, adding NFC altogether. But, you know, Bell is adding extra functionality, making it easier to use. But with all this optimism around NFC, and yes, we're going to be able to try it out quite soon, I would just add a word of caution. I mean, NFC is one of those technologies that really has a tipping point, and it does. There's a network effect going on here. It really comes into its own once it's in every phone. And we kind of saw a similar thing going back a long way with SMS, but I think the same you could say for something like GPS. NFC, it's kind of even more critical simply because, you know, it's kind of a connection technology, not a singular technology. It works best when there's other things in the ecosystem. And that respect is kind of like Bluetooth, and people remember the issues partly around interoperability, but just not everyone had Bluetooth on their phone, all that kind of thing. That said, I think NFC will come in more quickly, and, you know, the average life of phones, you know, a couple of years, does mean that we could see nearly every phone above a certain price point have this, you know, by 2015, say. But just, you know, a word of caution there, there is kind of a network effect, and so it's cool technology. I'm really looking forward to seeing it, but just, you know, it does take a little bit of time to come in terms of practical everyday use, although I'm sure geeks like us and those listening to this podcast will be using it before everyone else, but maybe that's as it should be.
The thing is, if we're already seeing that network effect, if you walk into any McDonald's nowadays, they all have the Barclaycard Touch technology. There's been a huge number of trials going on, and Barclaycard are really pushing for the 2012 Olympics to be, in their words, the Touch Olympics. There's going to be so many microtransactions pushed through London next year in that two-week period that, you know, the industry is really focusing a lot of efforts on July next year, certainly is the UK tipping point. And if you could just keep your eyes open around stores, certainly in the main metropolises, there's lots of touch pads available. So I think that payment tipping point is going to be far closer than a lot of us geeks are thinking, because we're thinking about it like a connection technology. We're thinking about needing devices. I think what we're going to see is we're actually going to see that the payment drive it, and then everything else follow alongside that.
That's true. I don't actually agree that payment is going to drive it. I mean, I think the interoperability factor will come in here. Yes, Barclays are doing it, and they're doing a good job. That's not necessarily going to work with phones. It's not going to work with other cards. And I'll give a good example of this is the Oyster system in London, which you can use to pay for a tube. Just wave your card over it and you pay for your tube. That's London Underground or Metro, for those that don't know. That technology is basically the same as NFC. It's kind of frustrating that I can't use an NFC phone to do the same thing, especially when it'd be easy to top up and all of that kind of thing. So I do think there's going to be these interoperability issues. That becomes even more true for payments, which quite often need to happen internationally. And the legal framework around finance is obviously quite complex. And there's reasons for that. Every different country has its own jurisdictions and set of regulations, but also the security around those things are quite complex. And so I don't think it's the technology that's going to hold it back. I think it will be the implementation in terms of interoperability and legislation required for some of this mobile payment stuff is quite complex, which is why I've sort of said for a long time I really expect the sort of touch to connect or touch to get information, touch to share, to really be the thing that leads NFC. As much as I want to see, you know, payments come in, and you know, you look at a country like Japan where this stuff already exists, there it's not really referred to as NFC, it's Felica. I really want that to happen because it does sound very convenient. But, you know, a good example is these early NFC payments trial with the Samsung Toco. I've actually tried this out. It's a bit torturous, you know. It's using the same technology as the Barclay card, the credit card, you know, pay to, or wave to pay, or whatever it's called. But on the phone, you actually have to start up the application. You have to say, I'm about to make a payment. You've then got 30 seconds to do the right waving bit in front of the sensor. Then you have to enter a PIN card. And clearly, it's a lot easier just to get your card out, wave it, and do it that way. So, you know, there's a lot of experience and a lot of usability issues to overcome as well. So I'm just, you know, sounding a note of caution as we get all optimistic and excited about it. But hey, it's great technology. I really do want it to come in. So I'm going to sort of keep my fingers crossed, but just maybe be realistic about it as well.
Yeah. So two more items before we finish. Hopefully fairly meaty. For David first, then Ewan. David, a slinky link from this NFC into the Nokia Essence. Now, you did the news story on this originally. More details have come out about this this brand new Bluetooth audio solution in terms of the audio quality and also the fact that you can just tap your phone on the headset to pair.
That's right, yes, it's an NFC device, and as Riff was just talking about, you pair it with the phone by just tapping, and NFC will trigger it. Nokia Conversations did an interview with a product manager, and I really hope I don't butcher her name, but it's Carolina Jarvensivu. And the bulk of the interview was talking about the noise cancellation technology, which really does seem like Nokia got a bunch of engineers into a room and said, okay, guys, you can do anything you like. Go have fun. Because fans of the Nokia BH905i may know if they were following the stats that claimed noise cancellation of 99%, whereas the Nokia Essence is claiming at 99.8% noise cancellation.
Yeah, I did notice that they've got a microphone actually inside the ear canal, apparently, because normally you have the microphone just on the outside of these headsets. They've got a microphone actually inside the headset, monitoring the sounds from your own body and cancelling those noises out as well, which is pretty impressive.
That's right. It's really amazed me when I was reading about this, because for anyone who does use earbuds, you can actually hear the blood flow inside the skin of your ear canal. And as you were saying, yeah, these microphones will listen to that and try and cancel it out. Other things it does is that the general noise cancellation it uses that kind of everyone does in a way, it focuses on low frequencies because they know that the high and mid tones are blocked out by the actual ear, mechanically blocked out by the earbuds, so they don't need to focus on that. And also, they actually use the external mic on the actual little box that's at the end of a wire that does all the computation.
Yeah.
They actually use that to listen to your speech when you're talking, because, for example, for this podcast, I've got earbuds in now, and my voice sounds very strange to me because the higher and mid tones are being blocked out from my ears. And what the Essence does is that it will take your voice and it's kind of the average range of human hearing, voice, sorry, and I'm trying to look up 400 to 3,400 hertz, and it will actually let that through into the microphone and out through the earphones. So your voice is actually coming into your ears through the earphones along with what you're listening to, just so that your voice sounds more natural. So I think it's amazing what the engineering have done in it. And I actually wasn't too keen on the Essence because I don't like things that have got permanently wired in earphones. But having read about all this, it's actually made me quite interested in trying one.
Yeah, they do seem like they've optimised it pretty well, and we're certainly looking forward to reviewing that. Final item on this podcast, Ewan, what you wanted to talk about, quote, sports, sensors, and real-worldy stuff. You've been cycling around again, haven't you?
I have, yes, and Edinburgh, of course, is the perfect city to test GPS because you've got buildings and tunnels and old converted railway lines and rain, which really helps out. I just wanted to step back a little bit, and we've kind of covered a lot of it on this podcast, so don't say we don't see the ideas all the way through. The amount of sensor technology that these phones are carrying now is absolutely wonderful. The number of sports tracking bits of software that are out there, they're all doing roughly the same thing, but when they can catch so much data, you know, it's all down to presentation. It's all how they do it, and they're all maturing so much. I mean, we've mentioned already GPS in a sort of roundabout way at the start, and the NFC with the sensor technology. You know, you pop a phone in your pocket, and it'll tell you where you've been, how much you're doing. We've obviously seen the heart rate monitors as well. You know, the smartphones are becoming less and less phone as they go through, and I do think that's creating a wonderful change and giving a lovely sort of what is going to be happening in the future. I mean, it's like whenever we have all these articles about what's going to happen the next 2 or 3 years' time in the mobile space, it's just like I don't think anybody's ever going to be able to get it right. I mean, I've been looking at All Sports GPS specifically this week, which is tracking your movements as you're either cycling or running around to do your sports. You can upload them to a website, you can share them, and you can download routes from other people if they're in the area. It's not a huge database at the moment to go challenging things. And it's just nice. You know, people always think that exercise and going out is being quite lonely in a way. But, you know, comparing what you have with the smartphone, it makes it into a wonderful team experience, even if you're just on your own. And with so much of the battle being motivation, you know, these big, hard, cold, inhuman electronic boxes are actually, I think, doing more to connect people than anything else.
Yeah, yeah. You look at all sports. Now, obviously, Sports Tracker is a title all of us know very well. We've had that for years on Symbian. And correct me if I'm wrong, Ewan, but Sports Tracker is A, incredibly polished, B, incredibly functional, and C, completely free. So how is all sports ever going to compete with that? Why do people even bother when Sports Tracker exists on Symbian?
Well, I think you must always have a choice in the market because it will drive the competitors. You know, the fact that All Sport, you know, is not the one that I would choose. I would choose Sports Tracker. Doesn't diminish All Sport in any way. But what it will mean is that if the Sports Trackers guys have any sense, they'll look at what makes All Sport attractive and try and make sure that they're better than that. All sports will be able to compare to Sports Tracker, and Demondo will be sitting in there as well. You know, All Sports does have some other advantages. The fact is, because it's running on Java, means that it actually addresses more handsets than Sports Tracker does. Sports Tracker at the moment is Symbian, Android, and iOS. On platform. So All Sports can address the BlackBerrys. They're very proud of that. They have a very competent Windows Phone version. Obviously, you know, if I switch over to Mango full time, then yeah, it's like, will Sports Tracker have a Windows Phone version or will I have to move on to something else? So there's things like that as well. So, you know, you should always have two or three bits of software in the market, and one of them will always be regarded by most people to be better. But for a healthy ecosystem, you need challenging competition, both in exercise and both in the software that actually measures the exercise as well.
Yeah, right.
I just thought I'd mention here, it's not related exactly to what Ewan's saying, but you mentioned Sports Tracker there. I got an email from one of the guys behind Sports Tracker this week just to let me know that Sports Tracker have updated their Bluetooth heart monitor. So I thought it would be worth a quick mention in the podcast here. This basically adds sort of heart monitor to your Sports Tracker information. You know, it goes along with all the GPS information and stuff like that. So this is a new module. They did have one that was previously out of Nokia, and it's actually an improvement in terms of the old one. For example, it's now rechargeable and you get a USB charger in the box. It's actually slightly smaller. It's got better connection range and slightly more reliable in the connection range. Those who've used the old one might remember it sometimes dropped out. But anyway, this is now available through the Sports Tracker website. That's shop.sports-tracker.com at a price of 60 euros. So if you want to add an extra dimension to the information collected during your exercise, be that run, cycling, cross-country skiing or something else, you can now do so. We should have a review of this particular accessory in due course, so watch the site for that.
Yeah, hearing Ewan talking about our phones taking us out into the world with all their sensors and information, it did remind me very much of Nokia's famous marketing video from 2 or 3 years ago. I think it was called Welcome to the Fourth Screen. And if you haven't seen that, Google it on YouTube. And I think I got it up on my YouTube account as well, so it's definitely archived there. Basically about phones taking us out into the world rather than having us closeted at home in our bedsits with our big PCs and Macs and so forth. Having a computer that has sensors and information and connectivity and gadgets and functionality, and it can replace everything we need and take us out in our pocket of our coat out into the world to meet real people, which I'm all for as well. So anyway, we're not
just geeks here. We like going outside too.
Yeah. Speak for yourselves.
Yeah, but you're from Hull. You don't really want to go outside there, do you?
This week's obligatory Hull dig. We're right out of time. Thank
it's
you
the
very
third one, Steve.
Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you very much, Ray Blandford.
Thanks, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, David.
Yes, thank you, everybody.
And goodbye in Scotland.
Oh, I don't get a thank you. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
You can catch us online, allaboutsymbian.com, at AS on Twitter, at Steve Litchfield, at Rafe Blandford, at David Gilson, at Ewan. Thank you very much for listening. Catch you next week.